Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out. His only films to be buried with.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a Zoom update, and I love films. As Gianni Versace said, it is the responsibility of a designer to try to break rules and barriers, and it is the responsibility of the cinema goer to wear masks when not eating popcorn. Very prescient, Gianni. Appreciate that. Thank you. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Jameela Jamil, Sharon Stone, and even Zed Brambles. But this week, it's the amazing and brilliant Mr. Brendan Hunt. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you'll get 15 minutes extra chat and questions and a secret with Brendan. Plus, you get the whole episode uncut as a video. All of that and more over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. As for TV news, if you haven't seen it yet, the whole of season 1 of Ted Lasso is now available on the Apple TV Plus app. Give it a watch. You will laugh. You will cry. It will make you happy. I swear. And if you are in America, the 5th episode of Soulmates is on AMC this Monday. It's co-written with the wonderful Melissa Stevens, who's been on this podcast. She's amazing. It's got an incredible cast. Again, we've got Charlie Heaton from Stranger Things. We've got Marlon Ackerman from Watchmen. And we've even got nephew Fred, Stephen McIntosh from Muppet Christmas Carol. Dreams come true. Don't miss it. It's a wild episode, that one. So, here we go. Brendan Hunt. Brendan Hunt. I've spent a lot of time with Brendan Hunt over the last 18 months, working on Ted Lasso in the writer's room and acting with him. He's one of the loveliest, funniest, brilliantest guys, and he's so good. I mean, God, he's good, isn't he? He's really good. I think if you've listened to Brené Brown, you'll know that she has a crush on him. I don't blame her. Anyway, we recorded this over Zoom the other day. It was lovely. He's lovely. You will love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 119. Of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by a hero, a legend, an actor, an improviser, a comedian, a hula hooper, a boom Chicagoer, an Amsterdammer, a playwriter, a screenwriter, an award winner, and a goddamn stealth missile actor, performer. Please welcome to the show, your hero and mine, it's Mr. Brendan Hunt!
Oh, you got my resume. Good. I was worried I wasn't going to make it over to you in time. Excellent.
Hello, Brendan. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very happy for you. I know lots about you. But I was reading up on the internet. I Googled you, lovely naked pics. And I also found, I was like, it's really nice. I like the fact that you're a fucking creator. You've been making shit for years. You've been winning awards for plays. You've taken stuff to Edinburgh. You've sort of been around being amazing all this time. And now you've had this opportunity to be like, out. Do you know what I mean? Out in the world. And I fucking love it. I'm so pleased for you. Do you feel like, oh, this was unexpected?
A little bit, because the weird bit of it is, it's like, yeah, so I've been working on my things, you know, for a while at are inherently non-mass media, but you know, fun to do, and, you know, things I try to keep developing and pushing along. And then in my spare time, I waste my time watching football. And now it's come to pass that all the football watching is actually the stuff that has put me in good stead for what's going to be my job for a little while longer. Yeah. And what a load off that is. Really. I can't beat myself up anywhere near as much anymore.
You were not wasting your time.
Yeah.
I love that. The universe was watching you and going, I see what's happening here. I got this covered. Don't you worry. Keep watching. Should we talk about the fact that Gary Lineker, I don't want to go on about Ted Lasso, but Gary Lineker tweeted about Ted Lasso today and I nearly lost my shit.
I mean, you would have far more shit to lose than me on that one. That's big stuff. I mean, I love Gary Lineker. That is really, really awesome stuff. And like, you know, we've had such good reaction to Ted Lasso, almost universally. But the initial bit of reticence came from certain members of English soccer media, if I may use the word soccer, which I might from time to time.
And that's going to annoy me every time.
So to have a week where both Jurgen Klopp and then Gary Lineker back to back, you know, come out of the Ted Lasso closet, it's a bit of like, yes, yes, your move, certain members of English football media, whose names I will not mention.
People keep asking me if Roy Kent's seen it yet. I mean, Roy Keane, exactly. If Roy Keane's seen it yet. And I'm like, why do you keep saying that to me? I literally don't know what you're talking about.
Completely different character. There's absolutely nothing to be asking about there. That's very strange.
Yeah, well, really, really weird.
Has Beaker seen it yet, Brendan? It's just nonsense.
Can we talk about this? One other thing I'd like to say, but I don't know if this is your private business. I mean, it is your private business, but I don't know if it's public business. You're about to have a baby. Can we talk about that a little bit? Congratulations. I'm so excited for you. You're having a baby. And what the listeners might not know is the timing of your baby means, and I've booked it into the schedule, is that your baby is going to be had in the locker room and we are all going to birth it. Right? You've agreed to that, confirmed.
We'll be in the UK, Brett, but we haven't really nailed down, a doula. Is that what you're after here? I'm just going to see how that works out.
No, no. You know? I've booked it in. It's fine. It's on the schedule. We're all going to chip in. We're going to do working shifts because we don't know how long the labour's going to be. But not only will it be fun, it'll be educational and good for the show.
And who in the cast is the midwife? Is it Hannah or Cola?
Oh, no,
or...
I'm literally delivering the baby.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm super comfortable now. That's fine.
Yeah. No, don't worry about it. I've seen it. I've seen films. Brendan. Oh, shit.
Oh, no. Is there a power situation? Is the audio okay?
I forgot to tell you something. Oh, nuts.
Wow.
Oh. It's like we see each other a lot as well, so you'd have thought this would come up. I literally saw you a few hours ago. I should have mentioned it then. It's mad. Oh, I just have to say it. You've died. You're dead. Yeah. Sorry, man. It's come as a bit of a shock. I know you had things on the horizon. How did you die?
Well, we had, as you know, such a weird 2020 and this, you know, odd shift in timelines and time dimensions. And, of course, recently it was July of 2026 and, you know, years after the Trump era has ended, America has finally welcomed the rest of the world back into our arms by hosting the World Cup. And as you may recall,
yes, I remember, you know, it well.
The U.S. made the World Cup final and against Germany, and it was 1-1 going in extra time, and then hat trick for Christian Pulisic, and we won 4-1. And I was lucky enough to have, you know, a ticket or seat in the house, but still.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, afterwards, what was so amazing was, right there on the pitch during the trophy ceremony, the entire team came out of the closet, and it was a big, huge moment for gay rights. Wow. And it was Colin Kaepernick times 10. It was fantastic, but it really changed the vibe of the after parties in New York afterwards.
Right, yeah. Because, I can imagine.
You know, the
because statistically, you wouldn't think it would be the whole team, but here we are.
Okay. But now, you know, it's really just thrown off the balance of satiatedness on the Women of New York. And like, you know, it was a weird day, Hollywood connections. I end up at, this is like Manhattan penthouse party at Heidi Klum's. And it's decadent. You know, she's taking it well, even though her people lost. And like, you know, there's oysters and DJs and tequila shots. And it's really, really great, having a fine time. And but then I'm looking for the bathroom and I can't find it anywhere. And then I open just a side door, and there's Heidi Klum just sitting on her bed, just, you know, sort of sobbing. And I'm like, oh my God, our host, I close the door and I go, I'm sorry, Ms. Klum, are you all right? She goes, I'll be fine. I'm just waiting for my friend to get out of the bathroom. I'm like, oh, okay. I should go. No, stay. Okay. All right. And her friend comes out of the bathroom and it's Gisele Bündchen, and she's upset too, but she's not German. She's part German, I guess. I don't know. She's upset because apparently Tom Brady also finally came out as gay. We all knew.
Right.
And then they just sit me on the bed between them, and they're like, we need some consolation, and you're the only one here, and would you lock the door, please? Okay. So I get up to lock the door, but on the way there, I suddenly shit myself and cough up blood because the oysters were off, and I die right there in Heidi Klum's guest suite.
Oh, Brendan.
Yeah, yeah.
The amount.
But I saw the World Cup win. That was nice.
The amount of times people give that answer on this podcast is shocking, and I wish you'd listened to a couple of episodes to know how often that comes up.
Anyway, Inglourious Bastards.
What a horrific death. I'm so sorry. I guess there's lots of questions I have, because I'm happy for the team that won, and I'm happy that they all came out. I think that was an important milestone in football for sure. I'm worried what Heidi Klum and Gisele wanted with you. And I wonder if you were saved.
Oh, like maybe they were like, satanic succubi?
Yeah, it's exactly what I meant, yeah. God,
that's so lovely. Thank you, Brett. I'm glad. I feel cared for.
What a shocking death. I'm so sorry. Do you worry about death?
Oh, gosh. I guess a little bit, but I almost constantly, for lack of a better word, fantasize about getting hit by cars. Like,
really?
I'm just a pedestrian in life, aren't we all? Life is the moments we have between crossing streets. And I'm a distracted person in general. And at some point, those two things are going to combine. So at some point I will die. It will be fine. But I just don't want it to be because I did something dumb. And there's a very good chance it will be that.
So not death itself, just sort of the legacy of how you died.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That's what keeps you awake at night.
I don't want the manner of my death to be yet another cudgel with which society can abrade me.
Do you think there's an afterlife?
I don't. I don't think there's an afterlife, but I do think that there is a, for lack of a better term, supernatural mystic energy around us that is more than what we are.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that we become ghosts who are, you know, just a non-corporeal form of what we are now, you know, eating popcorn, checking out what people are doing while we're gone, which will be a real bummer, I think, for the most part. We forget that, you know, after the eulogies, downhill. No, I think enjoy this time we have.
So what do you think the supernatural energy around us is? Some other beings?
Some other thing that we are foolish to keep trying to pretend we know what it is, you know, or describe. Like, it's,
you think we'll never know. We won't know when we die.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
It's
just the world and the universe, and it's pretty awesome.
Well, Brendan, despite all your theories, let's call them what they are, fan theories about death. you're wrong. There is a heaven, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind it. That's fine.
And it's filled with your favorite things. There's footballs. It's filled with footballs and football players. And they all want to talk to you about football. And there's improv and there's mushrooms and there's supermodels who want to talk to you about your career and have conversations. And in this heaven, they're obsessed with movies. Can you believe it?
Oh, I like movies.
Yeah? Well, what they want to know is, They want to know about your life through movies, through films. Mm. And the first thing they ask you is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Brendan Hunt?
So I was taking a real hard think on this one. And I think it must be Star Wars.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's your first film?
I believe so.
At the cinema?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Come on, that's not a real story. That didn't happen to real people.
Yeah. No.
Your first film? Oh, I just pop in. Oh, that's what cinema is it? Well, it is now.
Well, I don't believe I, you know, came to this decision independently. But like the earliest movie going memories I have, you know, of the three movies, it was Star Wars came out first. So I think it has to have been Star Wars, because the other two are Superman, which is only narrowly later, I know, and Raiders, which is a few years later. So yeah, I think it's Star Wars.
Do you remember the circumstances you were seeing Star Wars?
I don't, which further makes me think that might be the first movie I saw. I think I remember the act of seeing it. I remember, you know, I remember the scrolling, of course. And then I remember, like, what was that tiny ship? That thing's tiny. Isn't that impressive? Oh, wait.
Wow. How old were you? Can I ask that? How old would you have been?
I guess I would have been 5.
Wow. I mean, that's a pretty big one to start with.
Yeah.
That's starting big. And did you think, oh, I love all this cinema?
Oh, absolutely. For sure. And, you know, I felt very attached to Luke for some reason at that age. And I have a sister named Leah.
No shit.
So the Leah-Leah thing was, you know, its own, like, hook. Because I'd never met anyone or heard of anyone else named Leah. And Leah isn't quite Leah, but it's far closer than anything else I'd seen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that made it feel also, like, personal, you know, or like slightly more real.
But did you think I'm gonna have to kiss her now? Did you wait till Return of the Jedi to
don't want to talk about that? Right.
Okay. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 3 sisters. One is close to my age, my sister Leah, who's a couple years a year and a half younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom divorced when I was 2, and so there was me and Leah, and then when I was 11, my stepfather came around, and my sister Megan was born. And then a year and a half later, when I was, I guess I was 13 at that point, then my younger sister Sean was born. But all that was only what I thought for a long time, because I found out later that my mom had another child before I was born, who was placed for adoption the moment she was born. And this was like an unfortunately like dark secret of my mom's for a very long time, which I wish it hadn't been such a dark secret for her. And that sister turned up while we were in London shooting season 1 of Ted Lasso.
I didn't fucking know that. Are you serious?
Yeah.
What happened?
She got on, Ancestry.com or 123andMe or something. And, she was on one that the rest of us hadn't done yet. So I think it was under 23andMe. And she connected to the dad's family.
Can I ask when you knew that your mom had put, did you only know because this woman turned up, your sister?
No, my mom, your mom had told you. She confesses when I was like 20, but she confessed it as though it was like this, you know, horrible secret that, that she's been carrying all her life. I found out later, she told my younger sister, Leah, when Leah was like 12, I don't know, girl talk. I was not privileged, but,
you're not ready.
Yeah, she's been living in Colorado, and the problem is we were supposed to have a big reunion, all the siblings, but COVID happened. Oh, so they've all met now in Chicago, but I haven't yet because we're out here and we're pregnant, and we can only be so risky. So hopefully when we come back from season 2, I'll be able to meet the sister I haven't met yet.
Oh, so you didn't meet her in London?
No, she turned up while we were in London.
Oh, I see. Sorry. She
turned up, you know, in the grand sense of the internet.
Yeah. How exciting. That's so weird. I hope she's brilliant. What if she's a knobhead?
She's not. She's brilliant. I mean, the first fear you have when you find out you have a long lost sibling is like, are they a Trump supporter?
Yeah.
She's not. No. She's not. Golden. Unfortunately, her son is a Spurs supporter.
Yeah, so. I said, as soon as you mentioned her, I said, she's the best one. She's definitely not a novice. I've always massively loved. She's my favorite sister, if anything. And that's no, the other three are fine, but she's she's the cool one. That's fascinating. Brendan Hunt, what is the film that you found the scariest?
I think and, you know, because partially I think we forget, like, sometimes it's about the context of, mm-hmm. of a movie. And, like, so if you know you're seeing a horror film, you're girded a little bit. And I did not know that Time Bandits was going to be anything but a fun romp through time. And much of it is. But by the time you get to the last 15, 20 minutes, it is existentially harrowing. And, like, I saw it in the theater. So what was I, 8 or 9 when it came out? And, like, you know, I remember seeing a poster and my dad seeing, you know, my dad, who was in and out of our lives, but this was the moment he was there, seeing John Cleese as Robin Hood, and him pointing to John Cleese. I'm like, that guy's great. And I'm like, okay. Right. Oh, and I know who Robin Hood is. All right. I'm going to go see this movie sometime. And it's going to be hilarious. And, I mean, at the end, the parents die. Like, the whole maze sequence, you know, where, like, they're floating overhead, and like all the Billy Barker's crew is floating overhead in, like, nets and stuff. And, like, I was terrified. I was terrified for these characters and for this little boy. And then it seems like everything's fine at the end, but then the parents touch the rock, and, like, oy, just it messed me up.
Dark film. How old were you?
Very dark. 9 or 10, I guess. Shit. When that came out.
And what about, do you like being scared? Do you watch horror films now?
I don't particularly. I'll see some by accident. Like, someone told me on a whim that, like, you got to go see Cabin in the Woods. I'm like, all right, I'll go see Cabin in the Woods, which I didn't quite know what it was about, and mm-hmm. I would never have chosen to see. But Cabin in the Woods, despite being the movie I would never choose to see, is hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, my God, it's great. But, yeah, I don't really seek out, you know, scary movies.
Why? Because you're a big, weak baby.
Oh, yes. No, that's... Yes, that's true. Sorry.
I'm fascinated how rare, for all the comedians I speak to, how rare it is that people like watching horror films. Like, most comedians seem scared, like don't like being scared, and I find that really interesting. I just think it is about control, maybe, or something. Like, they don't like...
Might be. I mean, yeah, I don't seek it out, but I never, like, mind them when I see them, for the most part, you know. And there are exceptions, like, you know, I'll see every Jordan Peele movie the day it comes out, for example. But, like, I remember when I was, me and my sister were very little, we were being babysat. So, gosh, we would have been, like, 7 and 5. We're right. being babysat by our babysitter and our youngest aunt, who was our babysitter's age. And we were watching Salem's Lot the day it was on television.
Right.
Like the David Soul. And the babysitter's boyfriend played a prank. Knowing that we were watching Salem's Lot, as the movie was ending, they started banging on the back windows of the house at full volume. And me and my sister were way more terrified than was acceptable for such a prank. We were far too young to be doing that. I think he thought he was going to mess with his girlfriend, but it messed with us. And for some reason, we talked about this, like, more often than we talk about most of our childhood dramas. So I wonder if that left me with a bit of a... distaste for the whole horror experience.
That's totally fair. That's fair. Brendan Hunt, what is the film that made you cry the most?
I will give you 3 guesses.
Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams is wildly overrated, actually.
Get off the pod.
As to what Kate Winslet film is the film I've cried at the most. And if you get this right, I will give you £1,000. Personally, when I see you next.
Labor Day.
No.
Heavenly Creatures.
No.
Oh, one left. Hideous Kinky.
You motherfucker!
Yes! You heard it on the pod. That is definitely staying in. Oh, shit. It's rare that I do a recording and get rich.
That is amazing. I never would have pegged that at all. Yes, Hideous Kinky, and there's a bit of a reason why. And I'm glad we've already mentioned my sisters. So, Hideous Kinky, you've seen, mm-hmm. you know, it's a post-60s gal, you know, wants to take her Western kids out of Western society, moves to Morocco, and then realizes that she has to take them back home. But those girls are about the same difference in age as my sisters. Right. And while they were younger in the movie than my sisters were at that point, I saw that movie on a date when I was living in Amsterdam, and I'd been living in Amsterdam for 8, 9 months, whatever, you know, not seeing my family. And I hadn't, watching the movie, I hadn't clicked into them being like my sisters much at all, because they're English. They talk funny.
That's okay.
But in the final like 90 seconds of that movie, I'm just suddenly like, and I am, for the first time in my life, and really the only time, I mean, I've cried in a theater before, but I was absolutely bawling, like, like just tears streaming down my face, and I'm starting to make noise, and like my date, like, you know, girlfriend, really at that point, like, you know, grabs my hands, like, what's the matter? And I'm like, I miss my sister so much.
Oh, Brenton.
And like, she had to walk me out of there, and like talk me down. And I remember even those early days of cell phones and like not really being able to afford it, I tried to call home. I got the answering machine, which was still what we had at the time. And I just left this long, you know, message about how much I missed my, my sisters. And I got the loveliest email back from them that they remembered things about me sort of raising them. Cause like my, you know, my mom worked nights and my stepdad would be with her. So a lot of times I was the one, taking care of them. So I kind of raised my sisters in a way.
Wow.
And they remembered stuff about that, that I didn't remember. And it ended up being a real like touchstone moment of our relationship between the three of us.
That is one of the great answers. Respect.
I cannot believe you got Hideous Kinky.
I can't believe I'm making £1,000 off you. What is the, I mean, very moving story, but I'm not backing down on, you know, bet's a bet. What's the film that people don't like? It's critically not acclaimed, but you're like, fuck you all, this film's fucking brilliant.
A film that ended up having a big effect on my life in a way I didn't realize at the time. And it was a film that, there was a period where I lived at my grandmother's for a while, for about a year and a half, coming up on the age of 11, so like nine and 10, and then turning 11. And she had Showtime, which was, you know, an incredible luxury that I'd never even imagined. But the movies on Showtime were not a great selection back then. It was like the Gary Coleman movie where he lives at Union Station, On the Right Track, I think.
Yeah.
Might have been... Every Which Way But Loose and Any Which Way You Can.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly Beastmaster got a lot of play.
Nice.
But the movie that I think is legitimately good is Victory, which I guess you know as Escape to Victory.
Oh, Escape to Victory. Yeah. Yeah, of course you love that. That's great. It's, is it called Victory in America?
Yeah. Oh. Which I've always thought, because like some Hollywood mogul was like, Escape to Victory. Victory is not a place. But yeah. It's good fun. I mean, there's ridiculous bits, like particularly that Sly Stallone gets out of a POW camp and then thinks, I got to get back to that POW camp so that we can escape.
I got someone needs to keep that goal. That's great. Was that your first love of football came from Victory?
I mean, it had to have been a big building block of it, because I had no experience of football whatsoever as a kid. You know, there was, you know, that same league that the New York Cosmos was in, the NASL. You know, we had a Chicago team, the Chicago Sting. I was aware of them, but I never went to one of their matches. I never played the game at all. I was given a Nerf football as a kid, you know, with like yellow ones with the blue tiles.
And yeah.
All I did was pick out the blue tiles just so the whole ball would be yellow, but now it's cratered and useless and stuck in the rain. But Victory was cool. I mean, Rocky played soccer. So yeah. Therefore, you know, shouldn't we all?
That was probably the tagline in America. Victory, Rocky plays soccer.
It really was, probably. But it's holding up. Among the reasons it's holding up, I mean, A, it's very well shot. John Huston, you know, he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still the best football sequences of any film, because football or TV show, because football is, as you know, as we knew going into Ted Lasso and, you know, try to be cognizant of, football's hard to shoot. You know, football, yeah, unlike, say, American football or baseball, there's no set choreography. There's no stop-start. It's a constant flow. And once Victory gets chugging, you know, into those Pelé choreographed football sequences, it's fantastic.
Great. Great. You're doing great. What's the what's the film that you used to love? You loved it, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, no, I don't like this no more.
It's another Amsterdam thing. I was living with someone a bit younger than me, like you know, 8 years younger than me, maybe 10, but you know, we were living together and it was good. And she was American. I didn't usually have American girlfriends out there, but she considered herself a movie buff and she had never seen Tron. And she was very good. You know, this is pre Netflix and all. She was very good at like getting torrents of stuff and illegal ways of being able to watch anything, which is illegal. No one should do that. But I mean, you know, it'll settle an argument every now and again.
Disgusting.
Tron. Never again. You've never seen Tron? Oh, we're going to watch Tron and you're going to see what a dummy you are because Tron is fucking great. Tron is garbage. Until the cycles come into it, then like we're looking at some fun stuff there, but like to watch now, I mean, it's so slow before they get sucked into it, but then like their understanding of what a computer is, it's like written in the restoration period. Like what
do you think a computer game is? The problem with Tron is that it's like a fantasy film, as in like it's like Lord of the Rings but set in a computer. I'm like, why are they talking about, I mean, it makes me feel like Lord of the Rings, which is not a good feeling. But you're right, it's not like what are you doing in a computer? You don't understand it. What are you doing? You don't know what you've never played a computer game. That much is clear.
The personification of the computer is just so fucking weird. And I love looking at it still to this day, like how they made whatever skin makeup they put on and like lighting that made everyone look that way is so cool. But she fell asleep and I didn't even wake her. I was like, you're right. I apologize.
Just wrote a sign and left it on her. You were right. Good night.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What film means the most to you? Not necessarily because the film itself is any good, might not be that special, but because the experience you had around watching the film will always make it special to you. Could be a first date, could be, you know, listen, that Hideous Kinky would have been a great answer to this question, but you've used that one up, so I hope you got another one.
Well, you know, I mean, that's on you for two questions that have, you know, possibly similar answers. That's not on me. But having answered that question sentimentally, this question, I think the answer is Tim Burton's Batman.
Love it.
And first of all, it's the first movie that I chose to see by myself, which felt like a big boy.
Big boy Batman.
It was the summer that I graduated high school, so it was just generally a time of like, you know, trying to get into myself just a little bit more. You know, I was always very anti myself and very hard on myself. So this was oddly healthy, but also it was because at that point, the movie theater kind of near my place that had opened up, I was going there a lot. And it was the first time I clocked that there was going to be a preview of a movie. Mm-hmm. And Batman, if I recall correctly, was supposed to open on June 28th, which is my birthday, but at Webster Place Theater, they were having a preview of Batman on June 21st, the week before my birthday. And I was like, this felt like, you know, a sneak preview. That's a universe away of access and stature. But I just walked up and I bought a ticket to the preview of Batman and I couldn't believe I got one. So I saw Batman on the 21st and then I saw Batman on the 28th and I loved Batman so much. I saw Batman every day for a week. Wow. And then I saw it every week for 2 months. And then I whittled down to just seeing it every month until finally I petered out. But I saw Batman over and over again because it felt like it felt like a chunk of my life or you know, growth. I wouldn't have ever thought of it that way.
I love that. I love that a lot.
I haven't watched it in a while. I hope it's holding up because I sure loved it.
Listen, Michael Keaton is the only Batman as far as I'm concerned. Listen, Batman Returns is in my top 10. I love Batman Returns.
Really?
I love Batman Returns so hard. It's so good. It's like the feminist, it's the first feminist superhero. Yeah. Do it again.
Unlimited poontang. I recall.
It's so good. But Batman 1 is good. Batman 1 is like really good. And totally you forget nothing was the same after that. Nothing, none of our lives. You and me, Brendan, we weren't the same after Batman.
It's funny. It's true. It's funny that we, at the time, we thought like, oh yeah, this is the kind of darkness that Batman really is. And like, I mean, obviously things got more ridiculous with the Joel Schumacher, but we sure got a lot darker. But it's just a sign of where we were coming from, Adam West wise, which, you know, those things are certainly very fun too. I will never denigrate the Adam Wests.
Yeah. But I forget, like, it was pre-Twitter and stuff, and you forget there was so much. It was a bit like when Daniel Craig was cast as Bond, like everyone was mad at Michael Keaton before the film. When it was announced he was cast, it was like, he's a fucking comic. He's a stand-up comic. What the fuck are you doing? He's so good. And that very first scene, he's just like, yeah, I'm fucking... He literally comes in, they go, who are you? I'm Batman. And you're like, yeah. Yeah, you
are. this warms my heart enormously. All right, I got to see that again. I'm way overdue.
Here we go, Brendan Hunt. The real reason people listen to this podcast. What's the film you found the sexiest?
So, I don't know if you've gotten the sense yet, but I was not a confident lad in my high school days.
It's breaking my heart.
And then junior year, I finally got the courage to ask a girl out. And I think I did it via like the Valentine's Day personals, maybe in the school paper.
Oh, wow.
The fetching young Rachel Glauberman agreed to go on a date with 90-pound braces wielding Brendan Hunt. And that's pounds as in weight and braces as in on my teeth.
Okay.
With friends.
Why would you put anything on your teeth?
So for a bit of context here, me and lovely young Rachel Glauberman went to a school that was 75% African-American statistically. So I quite easily gravitated toward, hey, there's a young filmmaker who's got a very highly praised film called She's Gotta Have It that we should go see. And she, you know, timid young Rachel Glauberman was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, let's go see this film. And She's Gotta Have It is, you know, 90 minutes, black and white. And it's 50% just people fucking, and it's fantastic. It is in your face. It is not the movie you take your first date to when.
How old were you? Like 17?
I think I was 15. Actually, if this was junior year, and I think it was junior year, then yeah,
that's
great. She would have been a little bit older than me. She would have been like 16, and she was. You know, we both liked the movie, but it was like. It was like just like white knuckling.
We like, well, that was nice. Poster. That was nice, wasn't it? That's a nice film. Shall I walk you home? No. Okay.
She had sex with so many people. Had sex with so many people, and with all those candles and all that same overhead angle. Every time you can see pretty much everything.
She's really got to have it, I suppose. I guess they didn't lie. She really, yeah. She's
The posters and like the movie, the ad in the paper for it, like it just looked like a romp, you know. I think it was She's Got to Have It! Exclamation point. Is that possible? And like, you know, Mars Blackman, who wasn't a character, I just like, you know, looking in from the frame, and everyone else like, like, hey, this is gonna be great fun. That wasn't all it was.
Did you kiss afterwards?
No. We knocked us afterwards, and then she agreed to go on a second day with me, go see the less provocative Crimes of the Heart, and there was no third date.
Rachel, was it?
Rachel.
I tell you what, Rachel, listening to this, kicking herself. Absolutely kicking herself, going, I should have had it. Brendan, there's a subcategory to this question. Troubling boners, worrying widons. Is there a film you found arousing that you thought perhaps you shouldn't have?
So, Fantasia, right at the top there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole orchestra comes in.
Mm-hmm.
All these, you know, dudes in their tuxedos and their finery. And then they, like, almost pause for a moment. Be like, oh, who are we forgetting? And look over and, like, here come the harpists. And the harpists are... They've put themselves together. They look great. Yeah. Not too stuffy, not you know, formal, but not dowdy. And like, I mean, how many lady harpists were around back then? Like, they must have known each other for
mm-hmm.
a long time. Like, did they come up through harpist school together, or they were like, oh, I'm having trouble with the solo from Blizzotto. I know that one. Let me show you the fingering. Behind, like teaching bowling. Yeah, I was pretty distracted for the first part of Fantasia. Who are these two? What's their story?
Wow, great answers. No, it's weirdly never come up. first time Fantasia's appeared in the sex category. I'm impressed. What is the film you most relate to?
Perhaps because it's set in Chicago, which I always have a, you know, any movie set in Chicago gets an extra star in the review before I even see it. But Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And, you know, those who know me now as a irreverent outgoing sort might think it's because I identify with Ferris Bueller. But I'm not Ferris Bueller. I am Cameron. I'm 100% right. Cameron. And like, you know, Cameron's anguish at just trying to fucking communicate what he was, you know, going through and him like trying to have fun and people caring about him, like trying to let me make him have fun despite what he's gone through. That just, you know, that is about as much as I've felt I was watching myself in any movie that I've ever seen ever, you know, to this day. That Cameron character is really an amazing creation.
Is Jason your Ferris Bueller?
I think I've had several Ferris Buellers, but nowadays, I'd say yes. He certainly is the guy who keeps being like, "Hey, here's a fun thing." Like one day we're at Joe Kelly's house, actually, our lovely friend Joe Kelly, and they were both, you know, on having careers by then. You know, Joe was writing at How I Met Your Mother, and he'd been writing at SNL. Jason had made Horrible Bosses already, and I was, you know, painting turds, and we're playing Settlers of Catan.
I didn't know that was a job.
Yeah, in LA, you know the right people. And Jason gets a text message. He's like, "Oh, hey, did anybody got any sheep? No. I'm supposed to go do publicity for Horrible Bosses in Australia. Hey, you want to go to Australia? Yeah. So yeah, he is kind of the Ferris Bueller.
And I've seen that footage, and I 100% suggest you Google. Because you are dressed as Beetlejuice, right? And you went on the red carpet with Jason and pretended to be his security. And so you're dressed as Beetlejuice and you keep pretending to talk into your ear, but there's nothing there. And you're going, yeah, he's there behind him. Fuck, that's great stuff. That's good stuff. Everyone's like, Jason Sudeikis got Beetlejuice as his security.
I love that Beetlejuice is your conclusion there. It's just, I just have stuff in my hair. That's all.
Oh.
It's a slightly stripy jacket. I'll give you that. The stripy jacket.
It's Beetlejuice. Come on. Brendan Hunt, what is objectively the greatest film of all time?
I mean, objectively, it's all things being equal and you know, and the respective people probably say this a lot, but this is the question that you're going to get there for. Objectively, it's The Godfather. I mean, it's just, what are you going to do?
Okay.
Objectively?
Objectively,
it's The Godfather.
That's what most people say on this.
I know. That's a tough question. I know you get certain answers a lot, but you said objectively. Yeah, objectively. Said
objectively. Have you seen fucking Singing in the Rain?
Yes. I've seen Singing in the Rain. Seen Casablanca. Seen Schindler's List. Schindler's List is a very narrow, very, very close second. But Schindler's List, you know, it's kind of the same thing. But it's not the same as anything. It's its own unique film. But like, you know, with what movie scares you the most, like, you know, if you're seeing a horror movie, you're going to be scared.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with Schindler's List, like Steven Spielberg's Holocaust movie, this is going to be important and impressive. And it is, and it's amazing. I've seen it twice. And in the theaters, in fact.
Wow.
Second one was a date with a woman I went on to marry, oddly enough.
Get the fuck out of here.
But Godfather, you say, oh, gangster movie. Okay, sure. Gangster movie, yeah. Whatever. And then, yeah, Godfather's amazing.
Okay, you can have it. I'm going to ban it soon from this podcast, but you can have it.
Okay, but that the word objective.
But you really got, yeah, you got in, you got in. What is the film that you can or have watched the most over and over again?
So this gets back to my sisters, my youngest sisters, but it's a Help.
Oh, really?
The Beatles movie. Yeah, we are we're big Beatles fans in our family. Partially because, you know, my mom was a Beatles fan. I mean, the Beatles, you don't need a reason to be a Beatles fan. The Beatles are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I got Help on VHS for Christmas one year, and we watched it constantly. And it's not the most beloved Beatles movie. No. It's maybe, you know, it's maybe number three on people's Beatles movie list.
You're right.
And I...
What's your order? What's the order normally? It's Hard Day's Night, Yellow Submarine. Help.
Yeah, Hard Day's Night is the most important one, and yeah. Then Yellow Submarine is pretty damn amazing, and then Help is the one that's like cute.
Yeah,
and then Magical Mystery Tour and Let It Be are both different kinds of mess.
Helps helps the Return of the Jedi of the Beatles trilogy, as in it's really sweet, and I've got no beef with it.
Yeah, yeah,
but it doesn't get enough credit.
There's legitimately funny stuff in it, and like maybe it's because that was also a time in my life when I was like discovering, you know, Monty Python and British comedy, because this is, while not the heights of those, it's in that same family. And there's some surrealist jokes, and there's some jokes that are surprising. And so lines from that movie, that's probably the movie that I most bring lines from into my daily patois, but no one ever gets a single line that I ever say.
Could you do one of them?
Hey, up. He's calling you up. oh gosh, now I'm stumped for them. One will come back to me. But a thing about my sisters, so that I saw his kinky, I left an emotional voicemail. They sent me an email about things I remembered, and one of the things they remembered specifically that I'd forgotten about was that sometimes when I was putting them to sleep, I would sing to them to help them sleep, and the lullaby was most common lullaby was "You've Got to Hide Your Love Away," which is in Help and is a really lovely sequence, and I did not remember that I used to sing that to them. And the fact that they did remember that as like a big part of their growing up was
Brendan, it breaks staggering. My heart that you ever had low self-esteem and hated yourself when you're such a lovely man and you raised your sisters and you're a fucking saint. And if I hear you say a bad word about yourself ever again, I'm going to slap you in the face.
Whatever. You just want your £1,000, you mercenary.
Oh, I'm not backing down on the ground, no, but you have my respect. What is, and we don't like to be negative, Brendan, it's not fair to, so let's do it quickly. What's the worst film you ever saw?
I'm not going to do this quickly, because I'm going to tell you why this is the worst film I ever saw. I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
A friend had tickets to Oprah one day. I'm like, Oprah? I've never been to Oprah. Oprah? Yeah, we're going to Oprah. We went downtown to where the studio was, and like, we don't go in the studio. We get on a bus. We're all getting on buses. Why are we getting on buses? Well, because we're going to the suburbs. Because in the suburbs, we're going to watch a movie that hasn't come out yet. Oh, wow. Okay, that's exciting. We're going to watch a movie. And that movie was Stepmom, and Stepmom is fucking garbage. Stepmom is...
That's fair.
Stepmom is cloying, treacly, the fucking... The family shows their togetherness by lip-syncing Motown into hairbrushes. Fuck you, Stepmom. They is garbage. Garbage.
We could just cut the clip of you saying "fuck you, stepmom," and put that online and see what happens. Fuck you, stepmom. That's legit. I don't like those films. You don't get them so much at the cinema anymore, but they're weepies. They're active weepies where it's like, this person is going to die.
Yeah.
Definitely going to die. And you're going to be very upset. And here's an hour and a half of this person that you're going to like is going to die. Enjoy.
Hitler, It was so by the numbers. Like, I've not gone back to it. I don't remember the beats outside of the, you know, again, the family singing Motown into hairbrushes, lip singing Motown into hairbrushes. Jesus Christ. But I remember just being increasingly furious as the movie went on. You know, I like Susan Sarandon, especially at that time, post Bull Durham. And Julia Roberts is fine, but it got a 1.5-star review in the Tribune when it came out a couple weeks later. And I felt so vindicated.
If you ever describe me as fine in the way you just described Julia Roberts, I will be devastated. How was my performance? It was fine. Like Julia Roberts in Stepmom to you? Yeah, fine.
hey, she needs no defending. She's a legend. Come on.
What film? You're in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
And I think this is, I'm going to go by the phrasing of this question because it's, you're not asking what.
That's correct. I'm not. I changed the rules on this question. It's the one that made you laugh the most.
And again, I think part of it is the element of surprise. Like Coming to America is probably the funniest movie I've ever seen, but I knew that was going to be funny and it delivered and it was great. But I did not even know that the movie Billy Madison had come out. Until someone one day was like, hey, you want to see this Adam Sandler movie? Adam Sandler has a movie? All right, I guess. I mean, if you don't know what's coming in that movie, it is just, you just get battered by by jokes and nonsense. And it is so goddamn funny, that movie. And like, it's like he just vomited his soul. He just vomited his soul into a movie. It is so purely him. So many good jokes. Billy Madison's great. Billy Madison's really, really great. And it'll never be like a, you know, top comedies of all time kind of list per se, because, you know, maybe it doesn't hold up to a degree of further inspection. But in terms of just a great night out at the movie theater, I don't know if I've ever left.
That's lovely, that is. Now, Brendan Hunt, it was 2026 and you were in the worst seat in the house to see the USA team win the World Cup. In the USA, you were delighted. Immediately, they all came out of the closet. We were all delighted. Parties were happening. New York went wild. You end up, because of your massive fame and influence, you end up at a fucking penthouse apartment. All sorts of people there. You don't know what's going on. You've had some oysters. You pop into a guest room. Oh, wait, Heidi Klum's crying. So you check, what's going on? She says, close the door. But then Giselle's at the door. She says, oh, hey. She closes the door. You're alone with the two of them. They say, come over here, Brendan. You then puke and shoot yourself to death. And I was there later. And I was like, has anyone seen Brendan? And I see Giselle and Heidi Klum. And they say, yeah, we were trying to have a secret meeting with him. And I said, what did you want to do in your secret meeting? And they said, we just wanted to talk to him about how hard we thought Coach Beard was. And we didn't want to make a scene. We didn't want to embarrass him. We just asked to have that conversation quietly. But in front of us, he shit and puked himself to death. And I went, oh, awful. I'm so sorry. And they go, yeah, it's sad. But at least the storyline of Ted Lasso had wrapped. So we're not left wondering what happened to Coach Beard, at least, because we know how that ended. But I said, but Brendan's dead, you're saying? They go, yes, we didn't really know him as a person. We only knew him from the TV. So, you know, we're sad. But I'm like, hang on, guys, we're all being very casual about this. I rush into the room. You're absolutely caked in your own vomit and shit. They haven't even covered you. These fucking supermodels. They got no respect. They've literally moved on. So I'm like, can everyone just give the man some space? I drag you into an elevator. We go down. You were on very high up. It's New York. Get you outside. I got a coffin for you, but I ain't seen you for a while. Put you in this coffin. The coffin was the size that I thought you were, but you were bigger, partly because of the amount of shit and vomit that was caked on you and had dried and made you sort. It was like almost like encased you, almost like a sarcophagus.
Yeah,
okay.
Good word. Yeah. A shit sarcophagus.
Shit and puke sarcophagus. Smash it up. Get you in this coffin, but it's absolutely rammed in there. There's very little room. There's only enough room that I can slip a DVD in the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night, it's your movie night. What film are you going to take to show everyone in heaven when it's your movie night, Brendan Hunt? Please go.
Just so I'm clear, though, like the movie that no one will judge me for having, right?
No one will judge you. It's heaven.
Like, because, like, you know, earthly controversies, you know, don't matter anymore. And, like, you can judge me about, like, how that movie felt like when you first were enjoying it. Anything that happened later.
Yeah,
you
just put them into it. I think so. Let's see if they're...
Well, then I'd like having to experience Annie Hall without any hang-ups of fear, because in of itself, as its own independent work of art, it is deeply affecting. It's very funny. It is so smart. It is incredibly well acted, and it will probably never not mean a lot to me. So I'm going to Annie Hall.
I'll allow it. Brendan Hunt, before we go, is there anything you would like people to look out for or to listen for or to watch of yours? Aside from Ted Lasso, is there anything else that we should be looking for?
Just something to root for, I guess, out in the ether, because the only bummer I can actually complain of in this COVID time, you know, when we've been so fortunate to have, Ted Lasso happening, is a play of mine that called The Art Couple, which was, you know, a like psychotic version of The Odd Couple, was set to open at the Kirk Douglas Theater in Los Angeles. It was 8 days away from opening when everything shut down. Now, the entire world of theater might be imperiled and doomed, but also this play might be doomed, and I really, really don't want this play to die. I think this play is good and people will enjoy it, and I liked doing it. So if you ever hear about The Art Couple happening anywhere, or just a place that needs a really good comedy play, please put The Art Couple.
Or do it online in your living room, like I've suggested. Brendan Hunt, what an absolute joy you are. I am honored and privileged to work with you and to have you on this podcast. Thank you for doing it. I will see you in 5 minutes at work.
The privilege is mine, thank both you. Places.
Have a lovely death. Good night.
Goodbye, Brett. Thank you.
So that was episode 119. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 15 minutes of chat, secrets, and a video with Brendan. Go to Apple Podcasts, and if you can, give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. I do read them. They make a lovely read. Sometimes they make me cry. Be careful. Thank you so much to Brendan for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Leiden for the photography. Come join me next week, where my guest will be another amazing one. You know it will be. I don't like to say who's coming up next, because sometimes I mix up the order. Who knows? But I tell you what, got some in the can that will blow your mind. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week, and please be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees, and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. take good care, and we'll see you there.